While we're waiting for this to load up, I should explain to you that this is a long-term experiment. We started this in 1999. And the reason we started this is in our area in North Dakota, we have about half of the producers that have livestock in their systems. And they also have rangelands. And a lot of times, they run into situations where they need feed and they'd like to know the best systems to establish to put on good gains on their particular cattle during the period. And we're looking at a period from September through December. First of all, I'd like to thank my co-authors. This is a systems type research project, and you cannot conduct systems research unless you have a team. And we had a very good team. Besides myself is Dr. Eric Schulagertis, Dr. Mark Liebig, and Dr. Scott Kronberg. Okay, one of the things we have in North Dakota is we have about 6 months of winter. And winter is the toughest time and the most expensive time to be feeding livestock. We're feeding them expensive feed during a period of time when their nutritional requirements are very low. And it's usually done in a corral. So what we would like to do is try and extend the grazing season so we don't have to bale this hay and haul it in and feed them in the corral. And with the increased price of diesel fuel, baling and hauling it in, along with twine and all the haying operations, costs a great deal of money. So our objectives, at least from the cropping system standpoint, were first of all to develop no-till cropping systems which meet dietary requirements for cows and calves for the period from late September through December. Secondly, we have the philosophy, or some producers have the philosophy in North Dakota, is you can't mix livestock with no-till. It may create a problem. So we want to know what the livestock impacts on forage, stover, and grain production are in comparison to an area where we do not have livestock on. Now, the cropping system we chose was a three-year system. We based this system on dietary requirements and when this feed would become available for livestock. We chose an oat with a cover crop of alfalfa, hairy vetch, and red clover. The second crop after the oats in the system would be sorghum sedan, and this is brown midrib. And the cover crop we used was sweet clover and red clover. And then we had corn for grain. Now, to give you an idea of what the oats was like, we came in at the soft dough and we swathed the oats and left it in a windrow, and this occurred about late August. That opened up the canopy and allowed the cover crops to grow. Now, there's two advantages to having cover crops in this system. We still have adequate twine for regrowth as long as we can get precipitation. And secondly, it provides high nutrition and high quality forage for the calves that will be going on to this particular portion of the system. This was grazed first. The oats was grazed first. Then we had sorghum sedan. And sorghum sedan we usually plant first part of June. Along with the cover crop, we don't swath this down until after the first killing frost. We discovered if we swath it too early while the crop is still green, we ended up with a lot of harvest loss due to mold. So we wait till we get a frost to start the drying process. We swath it, and it usually occurs mid to late September. And the sorghum sedan produces large quantities of biomass. So this is the one we use last. because we usually have snow when we're grazing sorghum sedan. The other one is corn, and we're growing corn for grain, and we took and used the skip row technique that was developed in the Central Great Plains. And it's the same plant population on a per hectare basis. The thing is, the row arrangement's a little bit different. We planted two rows and skipped one. And we dropped we use an all crop header. We dropped the forage between the two narrow rows. Now, part of the reason for that is, number one, when cows go up and down the field, they like to follow the path of least resistance, and if you have a wider path for them, they will usually follow that path. Secondly, in the narrower rows, the standing residue helps contain the residue laying on the ground that we want the cows to utilize. The skip row technique was designed to conserve moisture between the wide rows. Supposedly, you can conserve moisture, and during that critical time period of flowering, that corn will have moisture so that it can pollinate. And that's, from the crop standpoint, that's why we're using skip row technique. Okay, the experimental treatments we applied to these three different crops were, the first one is residue in place. That would be very similar to a conventional crop producer, where he has no livestock running on his place. He harvests the grain and he puts all the residue back on the soil. Now, in the case of sorghum sedan, we used it as a cover crop. We chopped it and just left everything there. The second one is residue removed, where if you're a producer and you're putting the livestock in a corral, you're baling most of the forage up and you're hauling it off. So that's what residue removed would be. And the third one is we're grazing all the livestock in the field on these swaths, because we want to know what the impact of livestock is on the soil properties and does it improve or impact crop production. So we're grazing livestock on these three different crops we have in our system. Now, we're looking at a point in time and the average from 2007 to 2010. And I put this precipitation slide up to show you what our precipitation pattern is. In general, our peak precipitation occurs in June. And that's good from the standpoint of cool season crops, but for corn, it really needs to have the precipitation in late July and August, and usually we don't get a whole lot. So, for the period from 2007 through 2010, we were about 16% greater in precipitation for that period of time than average. And July and August, we were at or below what you would expect for precipitation during that period. So late season crops such as corn may not have adequate moisture during that period to produce sufficient yields if you do not use good management practices. Okay, if we look at the forage and grain yields, the slide has a lot of information on it. Okay, the green bars represent the forage, the red bars represent the stubble. Now you have to remember, for oats, we're cutting this from 15 to 20 centimeters tall and putting it in a swath, and there's that much stubble left, 15 to 20 centimeters. For sorghum sedan, we're in the 20 to 30 centimeter range, and for corn, we're at least 30 and up to 60 centimeters, depending on the height of the corn. The green represents the forage, and we're using the in place as our control. And when you look at the total biomass for oats, There was no difference in production due to livestock. For sorghum sedan, statistically, there was no difference due to livestock. But when you start looking at when we leave the residue in place for corn, it tended to be the lowest. And as we started removing residue for corn and for livestock treatment, there was a statistical difference between in place and the livestock treatment. Where we were running cattle, we actually got better yields. Not only for total biomass, but for grain. Now, when you run livestock on land, you can sometimes get in a situation where you have runoff. And in order to determine if we had runoff, we wanted to use a calculation we call precipitation use efficiency. That's calculated as the forager grain yield divided by the precipitation from the harvest of one crop to the harvest of another. And the units are usually in kilograms per hectare per millimeter of precip. In the case of three crops and the experimental treatments, there were no statistical differences. For instance, for oats, we had no differences among the treatments in precipitation use, meaning that even though we run livestock on there and use no-till techniques, we are able to store just as much or make use of just as much precipitation as we do if we were leaving all the residue in place. Same holds true for sorghum sedan and for corn. So in summary, averaged over the 4 years from 2007 through 2010, sorghum and oats biomass production was not influenced with or without livestock when compared to the in-place treatment. Secondly, corn biomass production was greater with livestock when compared to the in-place treatment. And third, precipitation use efficiency was not influenced with or without livestock or residue removed. And I thank you very much. I don't know if there's time for questions.
I have time for one question while we're getting our next speaker. But in the meantime, let's thank you for your... Do you have a question for Don?